just a lad of ten, my father said to me, come here and take a lesson from the lovely lemon tree. Don't put your faith in love, my boy, my father said to me, I fear you'll find that love is like a lovely lemon tree. Lemon tree, very pretty.
And in my quest to find the stars that have helped us enjoy our lives with their music, today I've got Trini Lopez on the line. And I do hope, Trini Lopez, that it's not too early for you.
Oh, no, I don't go to bed till about 3, 4 in the morning, California time.
Okay, well, I've started with that particular song because I've just, obviously, like a lot of people, read on the internet that you did have an experience with the lemon and your father and his good advice. Can you confirm that what's on the internet is exactly true?
Okay, tell me what you heard about that, and then I'll tell you if it's true or not.
Okay, well, Trini has made lemonade from a life that began with nothing but lemons.
Right, that's true.
And when you were 11, your father spanked you for hanging around with the wrong kids.
Yes.
And then he actually bought you a $12 guitar.
Yes, he bought it at a pawn shop.
Okay. Now, your father actually played guitar, didn't he?
My father was a musician. My father was an actor, a dancer, and a singer.
So you followed in your father's footsteps big time.
Yes, I did. Yes, because of my dad, I got into show business because my mother did not want me to go into show business.
You know, a lot of people these days are beginning to realize that when a parent looks after the interests of a child, sometimes you've got to give them a sharp lesson. And I think by the sound of the lesson that your father gave you, it certainly paid dividends, didn't it?
Well, you know, he didn't do it for that reason. I have to be honest. He did it because he didn't want me to be running around with the gangs that I used to run around with in Dallas, Texas. I was born and raised in a black and Mexican ghetto. It was a very tough place. And just to tell you how tough it was, a lot of my friends that I thought were my friends when I was a kid, they all ended up in prison, and they all ended up with gunshot wounds, and ended up in jail and in trouble. And some of them got killed. So my father didn't want that for me. He wanted something better. So my dad bought me the guitar so that I could learn. He said, I want you to learn something constructive, he said.
It's very, very interesting for me because I'm sitting in Spain. I moved away because I wanted to try and improve my learning of life, if you like.
Ah.
And I'm going to go to a song of yours that I learned. Let's play it first. I really, really do like this song. And, of course, somebody pointed out to me that it was a Pete Seeger composition. When did you first hear the song, and how did you decide to record it?
I heard the song for the first time when I was in Los Angeles. It was about 1961 or 62. And I heard it on the radio, and I liked the material. I liked the lyric, and I liked the melody. I wasn't too thrilled about their rendition of that song. So whenever I used to hear songs in those days, before I started recording, if I liked the song, I would do it, but I never did it the way I heard it on the radio. I always did it my way.
Yes, yes.
So that's the reason I recorded it, never thinking that it would be such a big hit. It turned out to be number one, Vince.
Oh, fantastic.
Number one in 38 countries.
And, of course, it's lovely to be able to speak with somebody looking back over such a wonderful, glittering career and then realise that, you know, all the different... People just only see the trappings and the things that people end up with. They don't see the process and the hard struggle. And dare I say, really, a little bit of prejudice, because I was reading about your... The chance to maybe work with Buddy Holly and what happened afterwards with the Crickets. Could you tell me about that time?
I grew up with a lot of prejudice in Texas. In Texas in the 50s, 60s, they treated the Mexican people worse than they treated the black people.
Yeah.
In the South. In the South. Not just Texas, but Louisiana, you know, Oklahoma, you know, Mississippi, all those, Georgia, all those places. And they treated us really bad. We had to sit in the back of the bus when I was young. I couldn't date a white Anglo girl when I was growing up. You know, things like that.
It really is quite mind-boggling. When we look at the things that we feel are great progress, I mean, it's not that far down the tunnel of time, and you're saying even between two countries really so close to each other,
uh-huh.
You had such prejudice. Absolutely unbelievable.
Yes, it was really, really bad for us, and I grew up with all of that prejudice in my life. But then, God willing, you know, by the grace of God, I should say, by the grace of God, I got out of the ghetto via my music, and I bettered my family, meaning my father and mother and brothers and sisters, and we moved to a nice part of Dallas, and I bought my parents several homes, and I bought my father's many, many Cadillacs, and my sisters and brothers, and you know, I bettered myself because that was the reason I wanted to get out of the ghetto.
Can I ask you about, first of all, originally, when you were born, was Trini the name that you were given by your father or father?
Yes, my father's name is Trini, but the full name, Vince, is Trinidad.
Ah, okay.
My father's name is Trinidad, and so his father's name was Trinidad also. And that's why, you know, they named me Trinidad. But everybody calls me Trini for short.
Okay. Well, you see, we've got that wrong in Britain because everybody would call you Trini Lopez.
Yes.
So it's Trini. Okay.
Trini, yeah, like in Trinidad.
And you actually had a producer, didn't you, that said that you had to change your name?
Well, yes, yes. The very first record deal that I was offered when I was about 17, 18 years old in Dallas, he saw me do a show with my combo, and he asked me to call him and come over, and he'd like to talk to me. And I said, okay. He was a show business a record guy locally in Dallas. So I went to his office, and he was sitting behind this big desk with a big cigar in his mouth, and he says, hey, kid, he says, you're good. He says, I'd like to record you. I have a record company. I said, oh, you're kidding, and I was all excited. He said, yeah, the only thing is, the only thing we need to do is change your name. And I looked at him and I said, change my name. And he said, yeah. He says, Trini is okay, but Lopez has got to go. So I said, oh, no, no. I said, I'm sorry. I said, I can't do that. I've always been very proud, Vince, of my heritage.
Yes.
And I said, I'm sorry, sir. I said, I can't do that. So, but I want to thank you anyway. And I shook his hand and I started to walk out the door. And as I got to the door, he says, hey, kid, wait a minute, come back here. He says, okay, you can keep your name. So I kept my name all these years.
Fabulous.
And I'm very proud of it.
It's funny, you know, prejudice I can quickly spot. Something that I didn't spot when I was trying to get myself into the BBC in England,
uh-huh.
One of the guys that I met said, you've got to change your accent.
Ah.
And because at that time I had a Liverpool accent, it was one of those things within the BBC you had to have this sort of, it was like the London accent, if you like.
I know,
you
a particular
know.
Sound, I know.
Yes.
Sure.
Now, I was very interested to read about your friendship with Buddy Holly.
Yes.
What can you tell me about that, please?
Well, I met him while I was struggling with my career in Dallas, and I used to go out of Dallas to different towns, 200-400 miles away from Dallas to do shows. And this particular time, I was at a little town called Wichita Falls, Texas, which is about 2.5-3 hours from Dallas. And Buddy Holly happened to be in town promoting one of his songs at that time. And there was a record producer named, they call him Snuff Garrett. His name is Tommy Garrett. Tommy Garrett is known for Tommy Garrett and his 50 guitars. Have you heard of those?
Yes, I have.
Okay, so his name was, they call him Snuffy, they call him Snuff Garrett. So Snuff brought Buddy Holly to see me do a show that one night, and after the show, Snuff Garrett comes over to me, and he was working, by the way, as a disc jockey. Snuff Garrett was working in Wichita Falls as a disc jockey, so he brings Buddy with him because they were promoting Buddy's new record. So he says, Trini, he says, would you like to meet Buddy Holly? I said, yeah. I said, well, here he is, you know. And I was so excited because at that time, Vince, Buddy already had a big record called That'll Be the Day.
Yes.
And he already had Peggy Sue and Maybe Baby.
Lovely.
And he had an album out already at that time. And he was the nicest man. He was so very nice. And he looked at me and we talked for about 2-3 minutes and he says, hey, man, you're good. He says, would you like to meet my record producer? And I said, oh, my God, of course. He said, well, if you can get your band and everything and go out to Clovis, New Mexico, he says. If you can go out to Clovis, he says, I'd like to introduce you to him and maybe we can get you a record deal. And I had only had a hit locally in Dallas with that man that wanted me to change my name.
Yeah.
But now this is big time because Buddy was with Brunswick Records and Coral Records. They were affiliated. So that's a big label. That was a national label. So I said, oh, Buddy, my God. So I said, sure. So within 2-3 weeks, I packed my guys in my station wagon, and we go out to Clovis. Unfortunately, prejudice hit me again in the face. We get there, and we stayed at a little motel and across from the studio, recording studio. Well, that first night, they had a big party, and I met Norman Petty, who was Buddy's record producer and engineer and songwriter, and he's the one that was responsible for getting Buddy started with his career. So that night, I sang with my guys, and we had a real good time. Well, then the next morning, my guys and my band wake me up and tell me that they had been talking, and now that we're going to be recording for this big label, they don't want me to have my name anymore on the band. I used to be known as Trini Lopez and his combo.
Yes.
So now they said, no more Trini Lopez. We're going to call ourselves the Big Beats or some name, they told me. And I said, well, why is that? He said, well, because we want to go commune. We want to go commune. And I said, what does that mean? And they said, community property. We're all going to sing. I said, wait a minute. You guys do not know how to sing. He said, well, we're all going to sing, and we're all going to make the same amount of money. It was my band. I was the leader. I was the leader of the band. It was my instruments, my car. I was the manager. I was the lead singer, the whole bit, you know. I was the only one that sang. So would you believe that did that to me? And I went back to Dallas, and I never did anything. But by the grace of God, the Crickets liked me, and when Buddy unfortunately met his death, the Crickets called me again. Snuff Garrett called me from Hollywood. After Buddy died, about 3 months later, I got a phone call. I'm appearing at a nightclub in the same hometown of Buddy Holly's hometown, just by coincidence. Ironically, I was working in Lubbock, Texas,
oh, yes.
Buddy's hometown. And I was working at a millionaire's club, making $800 a week with my new band. I had to get myself a new band. So they called me. They said, Trini, this is Snuff. Snuff Garrett. I said, Snuff. I said, where are you? He says, I'm in Hollywood. And I said, Hollywood, what are you doing there? He said, well, I'm here with the Crickets. And guess what? They want to get going again and start another tour, and they want you to be their lead singer. They want you to take over Buddy Holly's place. I nearly dropped the phone, Vance.
Yes.
I said, are you kidding me? And they said, no, get over here as soon as you can. So I did. I went to Hollywood, and because of Buddy Holly, I ended up staying in Hollywood and getting discovered by Frank Sinatra.
Fabulous. I'm with Trini Lopez, and I've got to play you this quickly. Here we go. How about this?
A reputation, sinner man known throughout the nation. Sinner man, that's his occupation. Yes, is a sinner man.
Who was a sinner man?
Now, in June 1963, you made your New York debut with your own 11-man orchestra that brother Jesse, just tell us about it. Obviously, you went well.
Thank you. After the record, if I had a hammer, started making, going up the charts real fast with my first album that I did at a nightclub called PJ's in Hollywood. Because nothing worked out with the Crickets, because they were drinking and having a good time, and they never got into doing an act and getting going. So I went on my own. I ended up at a nightclub called PJ's, because I used to hear Sinatra used to go there all the time.
Yes.
And I wanted to meet Sinatra. I wanted to. He was my only idol I've ever had in my whole life. So I just wanted to see him in person. I would have been thrilled the rest of my life. So anyway, so I'm working there, and within 2 months or so of being at this place called Peaches, where Sinatra used to come in all the time with Steve McQueen and Paul Newman and all these big stars, he sends Don Costa, the great record producer, to talk to me, and they gave me a 5-year record contract. And that song you just played is a song that Sinatra wanted me to write. That song, I wrote that song with a couple other fellas, and we put that song in my first motion picture that Frank Sinatra put me in, a movie starring Mr. Sinatra and Dean Martin and Deborah Kerr. It was called Marriage on the Rocks.
Yes, fantastic. I'm also reading about this position that you were holding, which is a goodwill ambassador for the United States. Tell us how that came about.
Well, I started my career, Vince, I started in a real big way. You know, it was unbelievable because next thing I know, If I Had a Hammer comes out, and it's already making the charts all over the world at the same time as in America, but in a bigger way. So what happened from then on, every time I put out a record like Lemon Tree, Michael Rowe, You Brought Ashore, Kansas City, all these different songs, This Land Is Your Land, and on, all these albums, they were all hitting the charts and staying in the charts for years. But this was happening worldwide.
Yes.
So America, our government here in Washington, they noticed all of this, and so they gave me that great honor to be ambassador of goodwill for the United States.
Fantastic.
You believe that?
Well, to be honest with you, from what you're telling me, you thoroughly deserved it, and it was a wonderful choice, because obviously these songs have been so good around the world, haven't they?
Yes, they have. People around the world enjoy all these different songs of mine that I have done in the 60s and 70s. And they don't forget about me, Vince. Like you calling me tonight. It's very, very nice of you to remember me and want to talk to me.
Well, I have to be honest with you. See, I started this series a couple of times. I wanted to get hold of somebody, and then something happened. And I started thinking about this, and I said, no, I'm going to start phoning people that have made me happy during my life.
Good.
I'm going to phone them up and tell them.
Sure, so, of course, why not?
I'm going to link you to Spain. Here we go.
Granada, tierra soñada por mí. Mi cantar se vuelve gitano cuando es para ti. Mi cantar, hecho de fantasía. Mi cantar, flor de melancolía, que yo te vengo a dar.
Now, rather strangely enough, part of my life I spent teaching in schools. And,
oh, really?
Well, I was absolutely livid because in England, Spanish is a language that everybody should be learning. It's 28, 29 countries of the world speak it.
Uh-huh.
And they, in general, don't push the teaching of Spanish. So I took it upon my own shoulders to start doing what I could. I mean, I was not a Spanish speaker. I'm still only a learner, really. But I wanted to do something about it because I felt if you give the kids a bit more chance to go around the world and meet people in other cultures, 29 countries is not a bad start, is it, really?
No, it isn't. And, you know, I've always heard that the two most famous languages in the world is English and Spanish.
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Well,
I don't know if a lot of people know this, but all airlines around the world, their second language I think their first language is English on a cockpit. You know, the captain and the co-pilots and all these people, engineers and all. That's number one is English. And of course, Spanish doesn't hurt.
What about your life today? What sort of things do you do at this time of your life?
Well, since 1981, I have been retired. I have been semi-retired, I should say. the only thing I have been doing since 1981 is recording as far as show business is concerned. I've been doing nothing but playing golf and tennis and sleeping late. I love to sleep late. I don't go to sleep till 3, 4 in the morning, so I have to sleep till about 12, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, you know.
Yes.
But the only thing I have been doing is recording at least one album a year since 1981, and I like to go into the studio and just create music because I don't have to travel like I used to. I've been around the world I don't know how many times.
Yes.
And I didn't get tired. I did not get tired of traveling. I got bored
right.
with the traveling. And when I'm on the stage, I'm a happy guy. I'm a happy camper, like they say. But I really enjoy just staying home and recording. And my new album, by the way, Vince, I would love to send it to you.
Yes, please.
It's my 63rd CD I just finished.
I'll send you the contact details.
Send me your address and on, and I'll send it to you.
Lovely. I'm just going to quickly play another track.
Sure.
Just in case other people have not heard this side of your work, you know.
Que cuando comí donde, tú siempre me respondes,
quizás, quizás, quizás. Now, I have to be honest with you, when I heard this version of it, I'd only heard Doris Day beforehand that I particularly had heard and wanted to play again.
Uh-huh.
So that's a track I'll want to play.
Well, thank you. That song is from one of my favorite albums I ever did. Out of my 63 albums, Vince, that album is called The Love Album, and that's my favorite album as far as, you know, good music, what I call legit music with strings and cellos and everything. Don Costa did a great arrangement of all those songs on that album called The Love Album.
I've got to tell you that I have a contact in Palm Springs that I speak with every...
You're kidding.
Yes, every Thursday. His name is Berks Baker. And
what does he do?
He's got a vaudeville act. Berks is about 83 now.
Oh, really?
And he has two new knees. For example, yesterday he was telling me that he was off to sea, and he's got a 95-year-old gentleman that he looks after. Him, Berks and his wife go and make sure that he's okay. And he's a friend of, you know, the guy with the chimp.
Yes, I know who he is.
Well, Dan's been on the show as well, so I have links into your town.
Well, tell your friend to come and see me sometime at a club that I sing in Palm Springs on Thursday nights once in a while. Like every other Thursday, at least the season is starting now. This Thursday was the first opening of the. It's called the Copa nightclub in downtown Palm Springs.
Okay.
Tell your friend to come and see me and say hello.
I'll do that, and I'll know that he'd love to say hello to you.
Okay.
Now look, I've got to tell everybody that in July 2001, Trini was honoured by the group Nosotros in Beverly Hills.
Right.
And you had the Living Legend Award.
Yes. You know the actor. You know of the actor Ricardo Montalban.
Yeah, I know the name. Yes.
You know the name. He was he did a lot of big movies in the 50s and 60s, and he hasn't done a movie in a while now. He's an older man. He's in a wheelchair, in fact. But he was a very famous actor, very good-looking, and he gave me that award in Beverly Hills. And he's a very nice, nice person. And, I was very, very grateful, you know.
And, of course, it doesn't end there, because in April 2002, you were inducted into the Las Vegas Casino Hall of Fame.
Yes, how about that?
Absolutely fantastic. tell us a bit about that time.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, what actually was the evening like?
Tonight?
Yeah.
Well, tonight I had to do a lot of work, otherwise I would have gone to the Copa, because I go there on Thursday nights, and there's a real good group there, and I like to get up and sing 2-3 songs when I'm there, and everybody has a real good time. But tonight I stayed home, and I waited for your phone call, too.
Right. Okay, let's hear another one.
Amor, estoy solo aquí en la playa. Es el sol que me acompaña y me quema, y me quema, y me quema.
When you think back, Trini, and, you know, go back to your childhood, It sounds to me like your dad was probably the biggest influence in your life. Was there anybody else, apart from you mentioned Sinatra, but was there anybody else that really motivated you?
My father was the first one, of course, my dad. He was a very strict man, Vince. My father was a very, 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 very special person, and he was very dedicated to his family, and he worked three jobs a day to support me and my four sisters and my brother Jesse.
Yeah.
So he was very, very influential in my life, not only because he was a singer and an entertainer when he was a younger man, he married fairly young, so that's why he never really got a chance to do anything in particular as far as a big-time entertainer and so on, because he married my mother when he was 18.
Mm.
But my father was very, 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 very influential in my life as far as that, not only as an entertainer, and not only as a singer and learning the craft, but he also taught me about life.
Yes.
To be a nice person, to always be respectful to, especially your elders. I remember he always used to say that.
Mm.
And my mother, too, was a very special lady. And they both taught me everything more than I learned when I was in school growing up.
It's funny, you know, you're saying things that remind me straight away of my own father.
Really?
Yeah, he was. My dad was very strict and he very, very hardworking. And just as you said, you know, I think they've sacrificed their own sort of future at times to make sure that the family obviously did as well as they could. Absolutely wonderful people, really, aren't they?
My father gave me direction, you know. Otherwise, I would have ended up probably dead from a gunshot wound or something.
Yes. Trini, I'm going to make a page now and put a podcast of what we've been talking about on it.
Okay.
Then I'll link it up to your site.
Okay.
And I'm just hoping more and more people obviously listen to these podcasts of these people like yourself who have influenced me in the respect that I've enjoyed immensely the songs that you've made.
Well, thank you.
And, I mean, this has been an absolute pleasure for me and, you know...
Me too.
Well, I can only say thank you very, very much indeed. I do appreciate your time and continued success, health, wealth and happiness.
Thank you, sir. And I hope that you will send me your address.
I will do.
Because I want to send you my new album. And by the way, it's called Ramblin' Man.
Oh, lovely.
From the song Ramblin' Man. You know the Ramblin' Man, the tune that was a big hit 8-10 years ago. I think it was...
I'm trying to remember who it was.
I think it was.
I love the song, and I'm trying to remember who had the version I heard.
I'm trying to think of it, too, right now. But the album came out about 2 months ago, and it's already doing very well. And I'm going to send it to you, because there's some real good songs I think you're going to really like.
Thank you very much indeed. And I'll liaise with your secretary. Yes. And thank you very much indeed for helping me to set up this interview.
And Vince, thank you so much for your call. And please give my best regards to everybody in Spain. I love España.
Trini, thank you very much indeed. Muchas gracias.
Muchas gracias. Buenas noches.
Muchas gracias.
Adios.
Adios. Well, there you had it, the fabulous Trini Lopez.
I had a hammer in the morning, a hammer in the evening, all over this land. I hammer out danger, I hammer out a warning, I hammer about the love between my brothers and my sisters, all over this land. Ooh, ooh, ooh. I had a bell, I ring it in the morning, and in the evening, all over this land. I ring out the danger, I ring out a warning, I ring out about the love between my brothers and my sisters, all over the land.
94.6 FM, this is OCI.
Wicked, eh? Wicked, eh? Say no more!
There we are then, Trini Lopez, or Trini, as he told me I've got to call him, Trini Lopez, and...
and fabulous career.
Sinner Man has a reputation. Sinner Man known throughout the nation. Sinner Man, that's his occupation. Yes, he's a sinner man.
Who was a sinner man?
Who loved and ran away. He had a different girl for every single day. He used to tell them lies and alibis. He'd just pretend, and in the end he'd leave them there. He didn't care, because he was a sinner man. Ha ha! Sinner man has a reputation. Sinner man known throughout the nation. Sinner man, that's his occupation. Yes, it's a sinner man.
Then he met a girl as pretty as could be. He thought he'd break her heart as quick as 1, 2, 3. He didn't realize her flashing eyes would hypnotize. Did she surprise him? Could she be the girl who stole the heart of a sinner man? Ha-ha! Sinner man has a reputation. Sinner man known throughout the nation. Sinner man, that's his occupation. Yes, it's a sinner man.
The wedding day is planned. We're happy as could be. The pretty girl was you, the sinner man was me. La 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 la, la 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 la, la 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 la, la 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 la.
Repeat it to me, everybody.
La 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 la,
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 la 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 la.
There we are then. So Trini Lopez, a fantastic story, and as he said, from rags to riches, and absolutely wonderful career. Podcast will go up later today, and yesterday I wasn't able to get my podcast sorted out, so the ones that I should have done yesterday I will get done later today as well. Now we've got a meal to give away in a minute or two. The Labels and Tables Olympic Games Giveaway. Wednesdays, the marathon with Bar LaFont in Pollup. The Labels and Tables Olympic Games Giveaway with Vince the Prince Tracy. Okay, so we'll get Paul Eric through in a couple of seconds. Paul away, of course, this week, and Eric sitting in for Paul. It's 2:44. Like West Ham are ready to seal the Zola deal. That's Gianfranco Zola to be their new boss at CT's club. What he thinks about that? Anyway, that's supposed to be signed, sealed, and delivered by Thursday. The England coach Fabio Capello believes his side will perform with more freedom in Zagreb than they would be if they were playing at home. Well, we see what happens when that all kicks off. If you missed this one, the Rugby Union Ospreys 32, Cardiff Blues 10. Ospreys ease to a bonus point victory over the Blues at the Liberty Stadium. And Andy Murray's vowing to learn from his defeat, saying he needs to work hard to go one better than his US Open final loss to Roger Federer. I think he did very well in actual fact. And, of course, Federer thrilled with his fifth title. Absolutely wonderful. OK, let's get ourselves ready then. Lovely meal for two, Barlafont with Ian and Debbie. Have a look around the village. Absolutely lovely. He's E.T. putting his headphones on. Be with us in a second. Right then, so, Eric, what about Zola for West AM? It looks a good deal, lad.
You think so?
Well, to be honest with you, I like him as a player. You never know what they're going to be like as a manager. I have no idea what he's like in that capacity as a player. A really, really first-class lad.
As a player, I totally agree with you. And he obviously has the assistant coach for the Italian under-21s at the moment. He has a lot of experience working with youngsters. And West Ham has been proven over the years, used to have an excellent youth academy. And hopefully we can work on the youth that West Ham got instead of bringing in foreign players I never even heard of.
Well, it's not just West Ham, of course. I think virtually every club up and down the land. I've said many times, if you go out into the parks, if you go to Liverpool, which is, of course, the city that I can talk a bit more about because I know it, if you go into any of the parks in Liverpool, you'll find a football team. Invariably, there's Sunday's fixtures. They have a big area. There's probably a couple of hundred players. And I would imagine there's an odd person worth having a look at. Mm-hmm. But they're not bothering, are they?
You know. One guy does impress me. Have you seen the advert on Sky? That young little Latin lad with his football, his ball control, absolutely incredible. Mm. Absolutely superb. Easy, get him quick.
Yeah. Unfortunately, though, it's just business, really. But mm-hmm. as a man, Zola does impress me. He seems to be a very likeable guy. And if they can get any of his skills into the young players, he was a great player, wasn't he?
Well, I think, sadly, Alan Kirbishley shot himself in the foot by buying players that were prone to injury, like Kieran Dyer. I think he's played 3 games for West Ham in 2 years. That's a nice job to have, that is. Craig Bellamy, superb player when he's playing, and he scores goals. But there again, on the other hand, he's hardly ever playing, and Lee Boyer the same. You know, you bought 3 expensive players on big waste packets, I expect, who never turn out.
Well, I'll never understand any manager that buys trouble, and Lee Boyer, for me, has always been trouble, but... Of course, he plays football, and he's quite good. Yeah. Unfortunately, the two don't always seem to go hand in hand for me. Give us 3 numbers then, please, Eric, between 1 and we've got 25 names in this one.
25? So, I'll have a 22 then.
So 22, and you give me 3 numbers, that's the first, 22.
All right, OK, 14.
14, OK, so that's 8, the difference.
Yep. And I'll make it easy for you, 2.
2, OK, so we'll take that away, we'll have 6. Now, are we going to drop that in the middle? Give me another number.
Another number? 18,
okay, so that's 2 up from the bottom there, and I'm going to add 6 in because basically I've got 6 over here, so it's totally random. We'll go up or down?
Up.
Up, okay, so 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay, I have a name and you have a minute to win it. You have to claim it, please, within the minute, and that name is Sheila El Campeo. Somebody's got a lovely face by the looks of it. Sheila. Oh, she's back, by the way.
Yes, I know. I've been speaking to her many days. Yeah, it'd be the Sheila.
A minute to win it, Sheila, please. Eric's looking at the clock like crazy. We've got our eyes there. Come on, Sheila. You've got a minute to win. In fact, you've got less than a minute to win it now.
I know she does work at sometimes during the day.
Yeah, they still have to. They have very strict on this one, Eric. If they don't claim it, it goes again.
Okay.
So, how many seconds have we got left?
That's 30 seconds gone, 30 to go. George, if you're listening, give her a nudge.
Okay. Could we go to the second level? It's 2:49. We've got to get this done. Oh, hang on. Phone is going.
Right.
I was just going to say it'll go to the second level. Is that Sheila?
It's George. Sheila's just popped out.
George, I'm really sorry. I've got to be very strict on this. It has to be the person that's on my list. I'm really sorry.
Okay, George. I'll tell her when she comes
back. Tell us she's missed a good deal there. Sorry about that.
Will do.
Cheers.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Okay, you've got to be in it to win it. And much as I'd love to say yes, just have it, I've got to be very, very strict about this. Okay, so, Eric, another 3 numbers, please.
Okay, here we go. We're between 1 and 25, looking at 3.
3.
11.
11. 14.
And 21.
21, so that's 7. OK, 7, we'll pop that in just top, middle or bottom?
Top.
OK, top, give me another number.
5.
5, OK, so we're going 5 down, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and add in 7. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And I have a name here. It's a minute to win it, and it's obviously somebody with a lucky face. It is Ian Kay at Villamar. Ian Kay in Villamar. A minute to win it. This is Wednesday. It is the marathon. It could well go to another stage.
It will be a marathon in Zagreb tonight as well.
Well, it'll be interesting. They can't go any worse. Surely to goodness. Ian, come on. Ian from Villamar. We're running out of time here.
What's your prediction for tonight?
A doer draw.
Mm-hmm. No, maybe one more.
A really boring draw. That's what I think will happen. But there we are. And because he's Italian, and that's the main. Oh, hang on. Here we go. We could be going to Ian. Is that Ian?
Yes.
Ian in Villamar.
Correct.
You know what's happened, or do you know what's happened?
I don't. I'm just out at the minute, and I've just had a telephone call.
Okay, well done. You've got a meal for two at the Bar La Font in Pollop.
Yes.
A lovely meal for two. So,
thank you very much.
If you give me a ring, please,
yes.
Just as I come off air, you got the office number?
Yes, I have. Thank you very much.
Ian, well done.
Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers. Congratulations, Ian.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, so at least we've got that bit done. just going back to this business of the managers, because obviously, you know, yesterday we had our panel and we were all talking about various aspects of this. If you're going to get an Italian manager, flair is not a word you'd use, is it, really?
Well, they have individual flair, but team flair, no. You know, they're Italians on the stroke of brilliance, aren't they? It's sort of a quick counter-attack and that's it.
Why is it that the FA seem to never see a British manager? I mean, when you look at what we've had, we've had a dose of Ericsson, which everybody now knows was really like, you know, it was like watching paint dry.
Yeah.
I'll be very surprised if this is not the second layer of paint.
Totally agree with you.
Who would you go with?
To me, as always, whenever I played hockey for many, many years, I mean, when you played rugby, I played with passion. You need somebody like Stuart Pearce with the passion for the game and the passion for the players to get behind them. Motivation seems to be the problem. How you motivate millionaires, I don't know.
That's the key. That is the problem. If you pay anybody that much money, don't be surprised if they swan around in a big car and they couldn't give a monkey's.
Yep.
That's the problem, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So how would you... You've got to get some pride back in the country, haven't you? That's really what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Spanish lads, I don't know if it's me, whether or not I'm misguided, and I don't see it maybe the same as others, but I look at the Spanish team, and the Spanish team look happy. They look as if they want to play for the country. They don't seem to have these problems. I mean, obviously, they'll have injuries every now and again. But have you seen the Spanish lads training?
I've seen a better team play, and that's the England under-21s. They are absolutely superb. They are motivated. They attack. They have flair. They smile. They're happy.
Okay, but
what happens when it comes to the big team?
Why can't you transfer that? I mean, it's the same when they had the Centre of Excellence.
Mm-hmm.
You spend all that money on lads going away to Lillishall to go and learn. And I think it was about 7%. It was a very low rate, actually, was transferred into the Premier League. So there's a problem, isn't there?
Mm-hmm.
Where do you think that problem lies?
Well, you've got to start at the bottom. Yeah, all right, OK, they're sold off the playing fields. They took out competition from schools, competitive sports from schools. I think you've got to go back that far.
That was politics. And and the management of the FA is not politics. Unfortunately, okay. I think you've got to go to the management. You've got to strangle the management of the FA. I think that's what it is.
Well, I think we've spoken about Colin Harkness, who found Michael Owen. You know, you've got to go out. These guys have got to put their raincoats on, the welly boots, and go out onto the pitches and watch the Sunday team footballs, as you said earlier on, and look for these, you know, the people who can recognise the ability, not only as a star player, but also